welcome to our fourth recording of The Wiggle Room. My name is Dana Longley. I am I'm trying to remember my title. It's been changed recently. I am the Assistant Director of Library Instruction and Information Literacy at SUNY Empire State College. And with me, our regular hosts today, as well as special guests, are to my virtual left, Mr. McBride.
Hello. Very official, Mr. McBride. It's I am the blended librarian and library liaison coordinator at Buffalo State College in the E.H. Butler Library. That was my office mate sneezing, if you heard that.
Bless you.
He just wanted to say hi. That's Ken Fujiuchi. And then to my virtual right is Carlene Huxley from Jefferson Community College.
Hello. My name is Carlene Huxley, and I'm the instruction librarian at the Melville Dewey Library at Jefferson Community College in Watertown, New York.
And we are really excited. We have our first guests, actually, on our show, and two great just really inspirations to myself, and I'm sure a lot of librarians out there, from SUNY Geneseo. You guys want to introduce yourselves?
Sure. I'm Kim Davies-Hoffman. I'm a reference instruction librarian, and I've been at SUNY Geneseo since 1999.
Michelle Costello, I'm also a reference instruction librarian, and I have a fun new title as well, which hopefully can live up to, the Education and Instructional Design Librarian, and I've been at Milne Library for about 3 years now.
Well, great. Thanks so much for coming on, guys. I know you guys have a ton of things going on, so we're going to probably be peppering you guys with questions about the various things. First of all, I just wanted to congratulate you guys both for your ACRL, and correct me if I'm getting this wrong, the ACRL Instructional Section Innovation Award. Is that right?
That's right. Yep.
And it was a great write-up recently, and really a prestigious award for. Tell us a little bit about the award and maybe the project that you applied for it and won it.
Well, this award we received on behalf of our LILAC steering committee. We LILAC. Do you want me to just go ahead and talk about LILAC and then
yeah.
talk about the award? Okay, sounds good. So LILAC is something that we put together about a little over a year ago. It was a semester-long academy, and it was geared towards new instruction librarians, just because of our dealings with other librarians, specifically new librarians, and their lack of, we'll say, pedagogical skills and instruction, lesson planning, etc. There was we were finding a big demand for professional development and workshops on library instruction. So we had this opportunity, a grant came out for $5,000 through the Harold Hacker Fund for Libraries. And we were awarded $3,500 towards putting this project together. And it ended up being a full semester long project and incorporating workshops and observation sessions. We had an online environment. We used Moodle so that we could kind of keep a flow between everything that was happening. We had final project. Anything to add to that, Kim?
I was going to go in just a different direction since Michelle explained what it was, but I think one of the reasons that we received the award, at least we hope so, is the collaborative nature of LILAC. And by the way, LILAC stands for Library Instruction Leadership Academy. But what stemmed from some previous workshops we did, one-day workshops, Michelle and I were really adamant about getting a mix of educators and librarians from K-12 to community colleges to graduate programs in the university system. So we had volunteers from all of these different realms. So we were all learning from each other, from teachers who do have the pedagogical training as part of their coursework, and then from librarians who just kind of feel it out and do the best they can with what they have.
And So talk, how much work was involved in putting this project together? Because, I mean, I know I played a very tiny part in this, and it seemed like you guys did a just absolute ton of work in putting this great program together.
Oh, my gosh, yes. We, after this was over, as actually part of our follow-up for the grant, we had to put together the amount of hours that we all spent on it. So we actually have numbers. We're looking at, you know, anywhere from 200 to 300 hours of work putting this together. And that's individual people working on it.
And what we did was, with all the volunteers that gave us an estimate of the hours that they worked, we matched that up to their actual salary. Mm-hmm. And in the end, for this semester-long project, we could have paid a full-time librarian at $29,000 mm-hmm. Salary based on the accumulation of hours and salary spent mm-hmm. in volunteer work.
All volunteer
work. Stress
that. Yes.
Wow.
And I could say it was a ton of fun just being involved in it a little bit. I got probably more out of it than some of the students, I felt, and just sort of interacting with them, even the little part that I did remotely. It was
technology.
I'm sorry?
No, I was just going to say that, you know, so you taught from Empire State through your software system, Illuminate, mm-hmm. and I keep
I think we lost you for a second there, Michelle.
Saying to people. It was great.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's what I do. And,
it was good. Because,
right.
Well, it was good, too, because, you know, as Kim mentioned, one of the big things we wanted to do was model everything that was, you know, happening through the academy, all in our workshops. And the fact that you were, you know, modeling the use of technology through your presentation was huge. And it really felt like you were in the room with us. It was a great, great workshop.
Well, I wish I could have actually been in the room to take part in all the sessions that everyone else did. Maybe you could talk a little bit about some of the feedback you got from the participants.
Well, we used several different assessment tools, and we used SurveyMonkey a lot, and we used it throughout the academy, and we also had a final survey at the end. But one of the biggest things that we did is we had all of our participants do an online blog, and we were able to kind of monitor their feelings, their reactions to the academy the entire semester, which was great. And we were able to, a couple of times, change the direction of the academy based on their comments. For example, they were really nervous about the videotape component. We were going to videotape them at the beginning of LILAC and then again at the end and kind of compare their lesson planning. And that was something that they were really nervous about, being able to have the time to do it. So we actually adjusted that and pushed it back further to give them more time to complete that. So there was a couple of times where their comments, you know, directed us in a different place than we intended to go. And it was better that way because we right. made it more learner-centered.
Right. And they felt like they had ownership, that we weren't just imposing the learning on them, that they really did take a large part in the learning process.
Yeah, and I like even just video, you know, doing a video can be, because I went through immersion and they do like a, you know, sort of at the end that you do like a little 5-minute spiel of, you know, what you've come up with during the thing and do a little instruction session. And that was nerve-wracking, even though yeah. they were all experienced librarians, fairly good at their job. Doing that, but doing it in front of your peers is nerve-wracking as well.
Well, actually, the way we were going to set it up, they would just be teaching a class that they were already scheduled to do at their institution. But part of the challenge was finding somebody to videotape and finding the correct equipment to do that. And then with the pace of the academy versus the schedule of a typical library instruction semester, things weren't quite matching up. So that's why we had to give a lot of leeway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was impressed looking at and what the framework of LILAC was, because I think that's important as instruction librarians that we do challenge ourselves to start thinking about our individual sessions as as actual classroom instruction. I think we always have, but we've kind of always left ourselves, maybe for lack of a better term, at the mercy of the person we're teaching for. But I know for myself, I've started to take a lot of that philosophy and bring it into my instruction as well, because I'm working with a couple faculty members here and actually creating lesson plans and rubrics so that they have an idea of what I'm trying to get at. Not, you know, it's more than just library research. There's a component of actual instruction that's involved with it. And I think you're taking it up to a level that it needs to get to, because, you know, you said a mouthful when you said coming out of library school, most of us have little to no experience in classroom instruction.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's just so many limitations that librarian instructors face as far as the time limit, being a part of, you know, a professor's mm-hmm. class, like you just mentioned, Mark, you know, being seen as kind of an intruder mm-hmm. to the students, you know, with some research skills that A, they already know, so why are you teaching me this?
Right.
And B, what does this have to do with my coursework? Which, you know, right. boggles my mind why they can't see that connection, but they don't.
Am I getting graded on this? You know, right. is there a test at the end? I mean, they just don't understand sometimes why we're there, why we're taking away some of their time when they could, you know, be prepping for a test or working on their paper or doing something besides being in the library.
Right. So add on top of that, no training to be in front of, you know, a group of 20, young 20-somethings. It's pretty intimidating.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in a way, it's almost like you have to, as a library instructor, sort of make the sale. You have to, you know, make the sale to the students and the professor that time is worthy of their, you know, putting their time and effort into it.
Right, and to make it relevant, and that's part of that pedagogical piece. Mm-hmm. You know, knowing how to work best with your time, knowing how students learn best, and so that we're not just pointing and clicking, that we're actually involving them in the learning process. There's a lot to learn, and if you're just going to go on what you know best, which is maybe lecture point and click style, it's going to be boring to the students, it'll be boring to you, and you know, no one will really get as much out of it as what you could with some pedagogical training.
And I can say, as a self-taught instructor myself, that I wish I had a program, or I knew about a program like this when I was sort of first starting and being thrown into the instructional role, because I've done plenty of those point and click lecture things when I was first doing it, because it's the easiest and you're most comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. And the hardest thing about instruction to me is, like, you know, sort of learning to let go of some control. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, we actually had comments from several of our participants. We had one student who actually was a school media librarian. So she had some coursework, and she even said, you know, that this went beyond anything that she had learned in library school, and just the being able to go through all the workshops and talk to the other participants. I think that was the big thing, is the sharing of all of the doubts and the concerns, and realizing, you know, taking risks is a little bit easier if you have someone else to talk to about it, or you've seen something they've done in the classroom that has led to really good results when they've kind of stepped outside of that simple, you know, demo and presentation and gone to, yeah. you know, beyond that.
Yeah, one survey comment that sticks in my mind, and I think I know the person who said it, but she said something like, you know, sitting through these sessions has kind of given me license to break away from that point and click model, as if, you know, somebody is telling us
right.
that's what we have to do, but we do it because it's natural mm-hmm. and we don't know anything else. But being able to take risks, and once these students of LILAC actually went into classrooms and started experimenting, like, another comment was just the explosion of noise in the room as students were talking to each other and working out a problem. So it was really gratifying to them.
And one of the things that you guys, I think, is amazing about this program is you've built in sort of like a follow-up to the actual sessions, where you're having like follow-up meetings and things like that, correct?
Yes, we. You mean now that Lilac is
yeah.
in quotes over? Mm-hmm. We really wanted to kind of have a learning community that went beyond the academy. And so at this point, what we're hoping for our participants is to have a once-a-month meeting, and it's something really informal. And we've already had one, and we have another one in the works. It's really to kind of figure out where they are now that the academy is over and still continue that, you know, sharing lesson plans and sharing their issues, their concerns. I didn't attend the first one, but I know it really well. But the second one is March 15th, and we're really looking forward to getting back together and seeing, you know, how much of what they learn in Lilac they're using in the classroom and sharing their concerns. So we're looking forward to that.
Great.
I just had a quick question, if I could ask, Dana. How did you guys address, you mentioned that there were school librarians in this class, and different librarians have to kind of approach, you know, information literacy in different ways according to what library they're working in. So how did you guys manage to address that in the academy, in the different classes? Did you ever have presenters that would come in that worked in a particular area, or, like, you know what I mean? Since you guys are academic librarians, I would assume you would have the knowledge for the academic librarian stuff. But
yeah, well, I think the majority of the librarians were academic, so we really did take some steps to make sure that we weren't kind of overrunning the entire academy. But Jeff Lyles, who in my mind kind of started this whole idea, because he was brought into Milne Library, gosh, back in 2001, to run something very similar for Milne Library's newest librarians, and I was one of them. So based on that experience, we brought him in to do the first kickoff workshop, and he's an education professor. He's now at St. John Fisher, and he was a leader of student teachers. So it was his experience to guide student teachers in their teaching. And so he came into our library and really very quickly learned the ropes of what it takes to do library instruction. But he did our first session, and what was really interesting, he talked through, I think his name is Daniel Willingham. He's an author. And he wrote about 9 basic principles of learners and why students don't like school. And one of those principles was that all learners are more similar than they are dissimilar.
Yes.
And what kind of came through in the blogs all the way through the academy was, especially if librarians went to observe other librarians teaching in a K-12 environment, if they were from the academic side or vice versa, in the blogs, in our conversations in class, we were saying, oh my gosh, like, this applies to my 6th grade class, mm-hmm. or those 2nd graders, you know, I could see that happening at the college level. So learners are very similar no matter what the age.
Yeah, and we had an entire session devoted to classroom management. It was an entire morning. And we had a high school teacher come in and teach that particular session, because we thought that, you know, the skills that he's using to work with a high school class would absolutely apply to both the younger students as well as the college students. And, you know, I mean, his lesson was focused towards high school students, but really the message he was getting across, you know, definitely worked for academic as well as the younger students, because it was all just classroom management skills and engaging the students, getting them interested in the material that you're teaching. And, you know, we had some really good comments from our participants that it was great to have a high school teacher come in and do that lesson versus, you know, some maybe in an academic setting where there may not be some of those management issues.
Same.
Absolutely. Yep.
Right. And we also had a pair when we did a workshop on librarian faculty collaborations, and the pair came from a high school as well, so we were learning from them.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you guys am I remembering correctly, Geneseo also does like a partnership with your local like high schools, and you do some instruction that way as well?
Yes, we pair. I'm not sure how many schools we have at this particular moment, but several of the local high schools What they do is they first prepare their students in the classroom, give them a little bit of information about the college library, and then they come here and they spend an entire day. We do a small kind of a workshop with them in the morning, and then they spend the rest of the day exploring our resources, and they have the whole day to, you know, go in and play and see all these databases that they don't have access to at their own school, and then also, you know, having access to all the librarians here as well. So it's a really good program, and I think maybe over 20 years it's been.
Oh yeah.
Over 20 years. This program's going on. Yes. So yeah. It's really a really great program.
What if they had it when I went there? That was even, I think, longer than 20 years ago. I can't remember.
You don't have to disclose this thing.
Yeah.
Like, do the high school, and I'm just sort of curious about this program as well. Do the high school students get to interact with the Geneseo students, or is that like during the summer or something?
Usually just because of space constrictions, the high schools come in during break times because otherwise we're all competing for classrooms. So unfortunately, there's not a good mix of high school to college, but I will say that the high school students, they do get a sense of what college life might be like, and I think they really appreciate that they come into a college classroom. Basically, we give them the laptops, or we work in a desktop lab now, and we trust them. And so I think that makes a big difference in their mind, because, you know, back in high school, it's like sites are blocked, and, right. and they're treated like kids in many cases.
Yeah.
No, I'm from like the Lilac workshops that you put together. Is this where the idea came from for the conference that you're running, Kim, in March, the 3Ts conference?
There's some components to that, but I do think that the 3Ts conference is kind of going off in a different direction. But I will say, because I've just recently written about it, that through SUNY Law, the SUNY Librarians Association, there was this ad hoc committee for the Membership Enthusiasm and Outreach Work Group, and we were surveying membership for a perceived apathy of people getting involved in the organization. So long story short, some of the upshots of the survey were that New York State is just so broad, and so there needs to be more regional events. Money and budgets are tight these days, so events need to be low cost or free. Something that Michelle and I were so adamant about was modeling good teaching while presenting about it. So I think especially these three aspects have kind of seen their way through all the different workshops and LILAC that we've presented, but the same aspects apply as well to the 3Ts conference. And this one's a little bit different in that it's a really strong mix of librarians, instructional designers, teaching faculty. I think we even have some K-12 attendees coming. It's almost a balanced mix of librarians and teaching faculty, which is really exciting. But the focus here is combining good teaching techniques with technology and transliteracy.
Yeah, the instructional design part, because I think, Michelle, you have the handle of instructional design librarian. Is it still? It's still in your purview.
it's my new title. I'm still learning instructional design every moment of every day, practically. So I'm really interested in meeting with some of the other instructional designers at this particular conference and talking to them, because, you know, it's brand new and I'm just getting a handle on it.
I think it's interesting that librarians are kind of moving towards that instructional design. I guess mindset is the word I'm looking for, because I mean myself, I've also started gravitating towards that, and because the idea of design, you know, just to take the term design, is interesting in how it applies to what you did with Lilac and what's happening with the 3Ts conference, the Teaching Technology and Transliteracy conference, because I think as librarians it seems to be our role to mix into the campus culture and to work with the instructional designers and the faculty and do a little instructional design or a little instructional technology work ourselves, you know, is that blended role of academic librarian just seems to be shifting.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we for a class that Kim is working on, she for a Psych 251 class, she put together a tutorial for students, and it was kind of the first exploration down the role of doing tutorials and trying to figure out how, because we do a lot of instruction here, and we do a lot of, there's a lot of embedded instruction, and it's very time-consuming, and it's very beneficial, but we're trying to find other ways of maybe, you know, providing some of our classes, some of our content in a way that, you know, maybe a time saver, but also so that we can have more than just one class learn that particular material. So it was a really good project that, you know, that she was working on, so I don't know if you want to...
Yeah, part of the impetus to that also was that Geneseo is finally moving towards more online classes. We've traditionally been very residentially based, you know, very traditional in the four-year college model. So last summer was really the first time that professors were given strong incentives to start providing their classes online. And one of those classes was this Psych 251. It's Introduction to Behavioral Research Methods. And it's a lesson. I've done one-shot lessons for this particular course, gosh, for like 10 years now. And the lesson has been so solid, and it's really just about concepts of basic search strategies. So it really is a classic lesson that I never change, and it's not because I'm not willing to change it, but it just works. And so it seemed like the perfect opportunity to put it into an online format rather than teaching it. So with Michelle's help and Corey Ha at the library, we devised this online tutorial, which was modeled to be almost exactly as the classroom experience. And then we're doing assessments between the students that took it in class traditionally and those who took it solely online. So we're excited to see what the results are.
So when you talk about making it just like you're in a classroom, how do you go, how are you going about doing that?
Well, we use Camtasia, and so I created some PowerPoints that would kind of set up the lesson as if I were doing it in class, and so I just talked over the PowerPoint, but it's constructed in a LibGuide. So there's an embedded video, and then off to the side are some interactive activities that Michelle and Corey both created. And so as the students go through that, we can kind of monitor their progress just as we would in class.
So it's making them accountable. They have to stop during certain periods, and they have to answer questions, or they have to brainstorm concepts. And this way we can kind of get an idea, you know, as they're interacting through the entire experience. And then there's also, towards the end, there was a quiz that they have to take as well that kind of gets them involved, so that we know that in the classroom, you know, we'd be able to just ask questions, you know, and see who's paying attention. But in this case, with it being online, it's a little more difficult. So we set up these interactive activities just to keep them more involved and not just passively sitting there listening or watching the PowerPoint. They actually have to be involved through the entire session.
And then to follow up, the professors that we worked with, they sent out kind of an attitudinal survey to see, you know, which method students preferred, and then more of a quiz to see which method actually did they learn more from. So we haven't received those results yet.
That would be interesting to,
yeah.
And I'm sure you guys probably, you know, hopefully got some papers or something in the way, in the plans for that type of thing. One quick question, is that like LibGuide and the elements within it, is that available for other librarians to take a look at? We can post it on our show notes if it is.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we set up the permissions just if you have the link, you can get to it, because we weren't quite ready to make it, you know, live to the world. But we can absolutely do that. And just talking about it, we realized that this was our first crack at doing anything like right. this. So, you know, there's certainly a lot of tweaks that can be made to it. And my goal was to make it exactly as much as possible like the traditional class experience. So, you know, I realize that it's probably lengthy and, you know, there are things that can be tweaked definitely, but yeah, we can definitely share.
I can really share your experience with that, because I actually just did something very, very similar for another psychology class. It was a research methods class, and I created a tutorial using Camtasia with the same concept that I wanted to try to make it just as it would have been a regular class. But the reason for that is actually because we had two snow days. Uh-huh. And the snow days, both of them fell on the day that I was scheduled to do the class, and then again when we rescheduled the class.
Snow in Watertown, really?
Yeah, imagine that. But that was why I ended up creating it, was because I talked to the professor, and we're like, well, we can't just not give them this instruction because they really need it for research methods. And I was like, well, let me just try to pull something together on Camtasia. And I'm still learning that technology, and it did end up being a lot more lengthy than I had wished. Because I set it up with a couple of PowerPoints trying to teach them, keyword combinations and different, those kind of concepts, and then tried to show them a couple of databases. And then, of course, what I like to show these classes when they get a little bit more advanced is how to use Google Scholar, too. Mm. So trying to put all of that into one video was extremely challenging. And the one thing that it is definitely lacking that I love about your the idea of your video is having those interactive exercises in them. So I'm going to be looking forward to watching that and see how you implemented that.
Yeah, Carlene, we definitely need to trade notes because it sounds like almost the same exact class.
Yeah. Yeah, it was challenging.
Yeah.
So I had one more follow-up question on Lilac. When's the next one?
We're thinking about it.
Yeah, now that we've moved, there's some time between when it happened and, the amount of hours we put into it. We're now starting to think about it. We definitely have people interested in it. We presented at NYLA on Lilac, and a couple of the people in the audience were talking about, how much they would love to go to something like that. They were from a different area. So again, finding a way to maybe replicate this in different parts of the state would be wonderful. Mm-hmm. It's trying to figure out, the logistics on doing that.
Yeah, and we just submitted a 40-page manuscript to the Library Trends Journal, and part of that manuscript was lessons learned. So we're definitely already thinking about what we might tweak in the next iteration of it. And one cool thing that Michelle and I have talked about is maybe taking those 11 LILAC participants and then kind of converting them into presenters, or at least co-presenters, so that they can move from student to teacher.
That sounds awesome.
That's a great idea.
Where do you guys find the time to do all a 40-page manuscript and doing all this and the conference? I don't know how you guys find the
That's
time.
That's been
to do all
my
this
big
stuff.
Question through this entire podcast. I kept thinking, how in the world do they find the
you
time?
You guys must be workaholics.
We don't sleep.
We're always on email together on Sundays. We're both. Okay, what are you working on? I mean, pretty much my Sundays I spend doing work.
But you guys are presenting at ALA too, right?
ACRL,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and actually that's what I was going to segue into. So we're doing this this workshop or a presentation, and it's going to highlight LILAC, but also the two precursor workshops that led up to LILAC, but just basically the mentoring relationship that Michelle and I have had. And within the presentation, we've already talked about kind of highlighting our similarities. And so this passion for teaching and just energy and dedication, I mean, that's just rings true for both of us. So I think we spur each other on, and that's what
gets like, oh, you're working? Okay, I guess I'll work too.
Have you guys thought about putting together sort of a train the trainers type of thing, so that other librarians in other regions could put together a similar type of package, similar type of academy in their areas? And I'm sure you're getting inquiries like this, especially with the ACRL award.
Yeah, that's a really good thought, Dana. I can't say that we've thought about that, but we did have a proposal to kind of run this on a more statewide level. But in thinking about how it would run, Michelle and I weren't quite positive that it would be as stressful because it would stray from some of the key concepts that we were so adamant about. So training others to run something like that would be a good idea.
Yeah,
I can imagine if you can just put together like all the pedagogical thoughts as well as all the, you know, day-to-day planning and the things you got to put together to put together the actual place and people would be a great thing.
Hopefully that library trends article will actually be a good start because it lays it all out.
Absolutely. And just really, we just really want to focus on the fact that it was low cost and the fact that we were able to put it together with, you know, tons and tons of volunteer help. And that's what helped keep the low cost and the fact, the regional aspect, not making people drive or have, you know, need, you know, having to fly someplace to take part in this. We really want to make it easy for people to participate. So that was our big thing with if this it was replicated somewhere else, is just keeping those key, you know, components in the modeling aspect.
Yeah, and be able to follow up and draw on those and draw on those participants for possible future things is, you know, key to having it regional.
And the time frame of the Academy was key as well, because we had the entire semester. Our students were able to go to the workshops. Workshops were once a month, and then go back to their institutions and experiment and try things out and be able to reflect and be able to share on Moodle with their fellow participants, and then come back for the second workshop. So being that it was spread out through a semester, I think was really helpful as well.
One thing I can't remember if you guys mentioned already, like how long was the planning of this before it actually started? How long, how much prep time did you guys have to put in? Or like, you know, how much lead up time?
Well, we applied for the grant in April of 2009. And then the actual Academy started in January of 2010. So we had from April until January to at least get it started and then obviously continue, you know, working on it through the entire semester.
Well, and even pre-April, because we had to write the grant.
That's true.
So that probably took a month. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, almost a year.
Yes.
But, you know, obviously not constant.
Right.
Yeah.
Could I just ask a question about your experience with embedded instruction? How has that been going for you guys? And how do you manage to approach teachers to get them to allow you to have that kind of access to their class?
Wow. Well, it's going really well. There are a couple of things in Geneseo's future that could present barriers or challenges, so we can talk about that. But so far, yeah, the collaborative relationships have really been growing, and they started very small, just kind of a one-on-one. Sue Ann Brainerd, who's our librarian who really focuses on history, she's really the one in my mind that kind of started the collaborative relationships. And that started with just one history professor. And that kind of built very slowly, too. First, it was just one session. And then the professor was asking for a second session. And then in the end, they started working on assignments together that would feed the content, but would allow Sue Ann to go in and teach the skills. And for history in particular, we're talking about primary research from the 60s. So, you know, all of this was brand new to students. So it's not like they could come in and say, oh, well, I already know how to do this.
Right.
So from that model, Ellen Kintz from our anthropology department actually approached me, which was kind of a twist of fate. And she's just so passionate about information literacy, and I don't want to say she's a bully because that's a negative connotation, but she's very strong in her passions and what she expects from her students. So between she and I, we developed a kind of a semester model where I would go in and do 3 75-minute sessions, one focused on books, one focused on journal articles, another focused on the web, and then students would be turning in citations from their research, and I would be giving feedback and kind of guiding them along. So that's kind of how we ran it. But then it just trickles down. Then Ellen and I and some students presented at a couple of workshops, and a Spanish professor from Geneseo caught on, and then I started working with her. Same thing, we started slowly and it built up, and then so Bonnie is here now and she's working with some science faculty. When I went on maternity leave, Michelle and Justina took over for some of the embedded, and so they're ready to go, you know, as soon as they start up their relationships. And Michelle's in a really good spot now that she's the education librarian.
I already have one professor. I'm now doing three of her classes, and she didn't even do an instruction session at all last semester. So, you know, it's getting in there. It's seeing what the other librarians are doing, seeing them, you know, embedded in the classroom, that gives you that encouragement, you know, to take the risk to approach the professor and say, you know, you have a lot that you want covered in this one session. Is there any chance that you could give me a second session? And sometimes they'll, you know, it works, and sometimes they'll say, no, I just can't give it to you. But, you know, it's just having the courage to take that risk. And now I know this one professor, I have three classes that I'm doing with her. And so it's just, yeah, it's taking that risk and being willing to do that.
Well, and I think it kind of feeds back into the whole LILAC thing, because Michelle's a fantastic teacher. And so I think when you have those pedagogical skills and you can advise the faculty on, you know, what might work best in their class, as far as information literacy, we won't go much further than that. But, you know, once you have that common respect for each other, you know, I think it's easy to make a play for more collaborations.
You know, and maybe I'll go a step further, because you brought up a good point about, you know, you're working with a professor and you're bringing in the information literacy component. But in my experience working with faculty, when you start talking about learning outcomes and things of that nature, oftentimes it tends to be Greek to faculty. You know, they don't think in terms of, you know, here are the outcomes for the class, and this is the actual process, and actually sharing with their students the framework of the class. Actually, you know, you can give them the week to week, these are the assignments and this is the readings I expect, but maybe also, and this is what we want you to learn, which I think is going back to that design, and bringing in being embedded in classes and whatnot. I think that collaboration helps the faculty member. And I'm sure if one of the faculty members are here, they probably tell you that they probably appreciate the collaboration and the insight you provide in information literacy. And it almost makes steps up the class for them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in my collaborative relationships, I always see the research session as just a vehicle to getting the students to the content. So when I talked earlier about this disconnect, you know, I'm just teaching them the skills that will get them to the content that they're learning in class anyway. It's just a different method of getting to it, and this is a more proactive method for them. But in the end, you know, when they're practicing these skills and getting feedback from a librarian and from their professor, their research gets quicker and it gets better. And I've had lots of students tell me that, you know, once they step outside of these collaborative classes, like, oh my God, why aren't the other professors doing this?
Oh, that's got to feel good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, do you guys have like a built-in, like a program level or department level assessments of, like, you know, the impact that these sessions are making?
Interesting you should ask, Dina. Yeah. We just had a brainstorming session with the library instructors the other day. One of the new developments is that at the end of this semester, I'm going to take over as coordinator of instruction and reference. And so I had a meeting with the librarians to just, you know, throw out your wish list for the most successful library instruction program possible. And program assessment, especially at the upper level, is number one on the list. So we're all doing it kind of ad hoc individually, but no one has been there to kind of pull it all together.
Yeah, we do some assessment for our INTD, our basic classes. We have the professors bring the students back at the end of the semester for an assessment, anyone that's doing these basic level classes. but we're not doing anything at this point, you know, like Kim said, on a bigger level for upper level classes. She's doing some, Suanne might do some, but we don't have a formal program, so hopefully that's something Kim will be working on.
And Mark, that's where you come in to do that SUNY-wide assessment for us.
Oh, that's a dream of mine, you know.
I know. We should talk about it some more.
Yeah, we should.
That's funny. I was just actually finishing up the SUNY Law Minutes for Friday, and Mark, that's actually one thing that I was just typing in was, and we need to get with Mark to talk about the SUNY-wide assessment tool. So, yeah. Beware! Well, you're gonna be called in to discuss on Friday probably.
Oh, good for me.
And that'll definitely be a topic for a future podcast here. I'd like to, because I haven't heard more about this either.
So Dana, you may be more involved in that than you know at this point.
Right. I'm happy to pitch in any way I can.
As always. I think we're kind of getting close to the end, but I actually just want to go back to the 3Ts conference for a second and talk a little about transliteracy if we could. There's a lot of discussion about transliteracy in the blogosphere, and there seems to be a lot of argument back and forth of what transliteracy means. And what it means to librarians and librarian instruction. So I'll put Michelle and Kim on the spot here. If you could define transliteracy, how would you define it?
Oh, gosh, Mark, you really are putting this on the spot. I think
SUNY-wide assessment, so take that.
I think Dana was the one who pulled in the transliteracy for this conference.
And it sounded really good, so we went with it.
I mean, I guess the way, and I could have a very ignorant view of what transliteracy is, so Dana, you step in any time. I mean, I guess I just see it as kind of a blending of, there's multimedia literacy out there, and there's information literacy, and I in planning for the conference, I came up with an entire list of different literacies, critical thinking, and it's just kind of these things are getting blended together. And with students as tech savvy as they are these days, they really don't make the distinction between one and the other. But there are some differences, and I think that's where librarians can help kind of navigate the waters. But if Michelle has anything to add, and then certainly Dana, jump in.
Yeah, I mean, it's going beyond just the information literacy, which, like you said, you know, sometimes there's that disconnect. What does that mean? You know, how does that fit in for the students? But if we're bringing in some of these other, you know, media and visual literacy, I think that might be more relevant to them. And, you know, we're finding a lot more students that need help in other areas, you know, learning how to do podcasts or doing other aspects that maybe librarians haven't done before, but, you know, bringing in those skills.
So, and Dana, I would just add that, you know, in my experience, when you say the word information literacy to a faculty member, especially, their eyes will just glaze over. Oh, that's just something librarians take care of. So, you know, I sort of pitched the idea of transliteracy for that conference as a way to sort of reframe it a little bit as more of a something that might be of interest to faculty, that it integrates all the different literacies that are out there, ones that faculty and librarians and designers all deal with. Although, you know, there's been various arguments in the blogs about, well, transliteracy is just information literacy in a new form or a new label, which, you know, I don't totally disagree with those arguments. It's just a matter of semantics, what you want to label it. Because, you know, in my opinion, you know, all the other literacies, digital literacy, all that, you're all dealing with information in one form or another. So,
right.
But information literacy is just this baggage that comes with it, I think.
Yeah, the sessions that are going to be presented at the conference look really, really exciting, and I'm looking forward to it, definitely, from learning from everyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's almost full, right, is it? We got 120 people registered already?
120, yeah. It's pretty exciting. And again, from all walks of life, you know, it's pretty amazing.
Should we say the date? I don't think we've actually said the exact date.
March 25th at Fulton Montgomery College in Johnstown, New York.
And we'll put the links up to in the show notes. And you know, for anyone listening, if you want to register for to attend the conference, the deadline is the 11th, I believe.
Yeah, this Friday.
So sign up. And, you know, spots are filling up fast and the deadline's approaching, and it promises to be a really great and informative conference with a lot of sort of collaboration between librarians and faculty and designers, and something a little different, I think.
Yeah, and basing all of that teaching, again, on sound pedagogy, and how do you tie technology in with your teaching and you know, navigate these different waters, but sound pedagogy behind it all.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I would just say, and affordable too.
And one of the things we didn't talk about is, like, you know, how when you put this together, it was really an emphasis on the pedagogy as opposed to, you know, if you go to a lot of library conferences, there's like a lot of show and tell about technology and using technology, and that's when that really isn't what this is about. It's about the pedagogy behind the intersection of sort of instruction and technology, right?
Yeah, and I'm interested to see what the sessions will be like. When the proposals came in, you know, we stressed how are you going to demonstrate good teaching as you're presenting good teaching. But it's not always easy,
right.
Not so obvious. So I'm interested to see how the presenters get the audience members involved.
Yeah, it looks like a really exciting program.
Yeah. I'm thrilled that you're all a part of it. It's going to be great.
Now, are you guys doing anything for any presentations for SUNY Law?
No, not at this point.
Deadline's approaching for that, too.
Yeah, I don't think Michelle and I, with ACRL and ALA...
time for a break.
I was just going to say, I think you guys could use a break, huh?
Which it kills me to not go to SUNY Law, especially up in Plattsburgh,
right.
Which sounds like a weird comment, but... yeah, I've only missed one SUNY Law in, 11, 12 years. So this will be my second, which is sad. Mm-hmm. But yeah, things are kind of busy. Things are crazy.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm always jealous of the things that you guys accomplish at Geneseo. You guys seem like you have a fantastic team, and it seems like a lot of the efforts that you guys are doing are really well backed by the sort of academic administration and the faculty.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely jealous of that because we haven't gotten to that point at Empire State College, I don't think, yet. They're working towards it.
Yeah, well, it's important to highlight. Our library director just retired in December, and he's been so incredibly supportive.
Yes.
And Michelle and I can both say that we wouldn't get nearly as much done if it hadn't been for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cyril Oberlander is stepping in as interim director, and he seems to be positioned to continue that same level of support.
Yeah, without director support, and that was, you know, a big thing too with LILAC, all of the participants had huge director support, and I think you have to have that back from, you know, back up from the administration to really be able to do any of these types of things. And
right.
That was key for us.
Any other questions, or do you guys want to wrap it up?
I think we can get him off the hook.
Well, we want to really, you know, thank you so much, you guys, for making the time to talk to us. And
yeah, this has been great. Easier than we thought.
And we will definitely, you know, at some point have you guys on again to talk about other stuff, because I'm sure you have other stuff in the works that we're all going to want to hear about.
Yeah, anytime.
Yep, sounds good.
Yep. Thank
right.
you.
So with that, I guess we'll say good night.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Good night. I don't know. It's not night, is it? But good morning.
Yeah. Good time.
I haven't been out of my house yet today, so I'm working from home. So I don't even know.
Well, it's lunchtime, Dana, so it's time to go get lunch. There
I'm still in my PJs here, so.
All right, thank you all.
Thanks. All right, thanks.
Bye.
Culture Kills on WFMU.